Hi, and welcome to Lakeshore Update. I'm Sarah Dykstra. On this edition of the podcast, we'll get the latest on jobs coming to East Chicago. Regionally speaking, host Chris Nolte talks with Legacy Foundation President Carolyn Saxton about On the Table. We'll also find out what impact the heavy spring rain has had across the Hoosier State and what that means for floodplains and farmers. Then we'll also find out who might be challenging incumbent Senator Joe Donnelly in 2018. All of that and more on this edition of Lakeshore Update. The Gary Chicago International Airport Authority has filed a federal lawsuit against Honeywell International Incorporated to recoup the cost of cleaning up contaminated groundwater. The Times reports the lawsuit alleges the contamination came from a 4.1-acre hazardous waste disposal facility owned and operated by Conservation Chemical Company of Illinois. The site is next to the airport's main runway. The Airport Authority argues that Honeywell sent large quantities of hazardous substances to the Conservation Chemical site and now bears responsibility for ongoing cleanup work. The contamination has affected the 5,700-foot-long Boeing ditch, which empties into the Grand Calumet River, according to the lawsuit. Honeywell filed a motion to dismiss the case on April 24th, arguing it had fulfilled its obligations during prior remediation efforts. The Airport Authority has until June 7th to respond to the motion. Conservation Chemical owned the site from 1967 to 1985. New Jersey-based Honeywell participated in some remediation efforts as one of several potentially responsible parties identified by the U.S. Environmental Protection Agency. Honeywell said in a statement issued Monday, in the late 1990s and early 2000s, Honeywell and 14 other parties conducted an extensive cleanup of a portion of the airport's property under an agreement with the U.S. Environmental Protection Agency. Since we conducted this cleanup, the law protects us from the lawsuit's claims. We will vigorously defend this lawsuit. The airport's lawsuit, originally filed on March 1st, said the work did not extend past the site itself. The suit alleges the airport has spent about $500,000 addressing the contamination and expects to spend more than $2 million more on the project. You're listening to Lakeshore Update from Lakeshore Public Radio 89.1 FM. I'm Sarah Dykstra. A little over 100 children from East Chicago will be getting jobs this year thanks to the city's 2017 Summer Youth Employment Program. Lakeshore Public Radio's Sharon Jackson has more.
Malcolm Jones, Multimedia Associate for the City of East Chicago, says the program is conducted every year and the number of kids employed in it varies.
We have youth that works in various departments such as Public Works, the Parks Department, and just so many other departments where kids, young people are able to get experience that, you know, that they can definitely use in the future, such as experience that they can use in college.
The SYEP is an 8-week program that starts on Monday, June 19th, and ends on Friday, August 11th. Participants work 28 hours a week and earn $7.25 to $9 an hour, depending on the position.
So it's pretty much kind of like community service hours, plus you're getting paid at the same time. So we get a lot of young people that take advantage of this program.
The city is looking to fill several positions, including lifeguards, recreation leaders, basket attendants, and laborers. Applications will be available from Monday, May 15th through Friday, May 26th in East Chicago's Department of Human Resources. The deadline to apply is at 4 p.m. Friday, May 26th. The city's HR department will conduct a lottery of completed applications to determine whether applicants are offered a job. Lifeguards will not be part of the lottery drawing. For Lakeshore Update, I'm Sharon Jackson.
President Donald Trump nominated a University of Notre Dame law professor to fill a vacancy on the Seventh Circuit Court of Appeals. Indiana Public Broadcasting's Brandon Smith has more.
President Donald Trump nominated a Notre Dame University law professor to fill a vacancy on the Seventh Circuit Court of Appeals. Professor Amy Coney Barrett was part of a round of federal judgeship nominations the Trump administration announced Tuesday. Barrett, a Notre Dame Law School graduate, has been a professor at the private Indiana University since 2002. She formerly clerked for Supreme Court Justice Antonin Scalia. Law School Dean Nell Jessup Newton calls Barrett an outstanding professor, scholar, and colleague. Barrett teaches courses in constitutional law, civil procedure, and the federal courts. If confirmed by the U.S. Senate to join the Seventh Circuit, she'll likely be familiar with its procedures. For the last 6 years, Barrett has served by appointment of Chief Justice John Roberts on the Advisory Committee for the Federal Rules of Appellate Procedure.
You're listening to Lakeshore Update from Lakeshore Public Radio 89.1 FM. I'm Sarah Dykstra. Three Republican Indiana congressmen who've been rumored as possible opponents to Joe Donnelly in next year's Senate race issued public statements Wednesday on the firing of FBI Director James Comey by President Donald Trump. But just one, 4th District Representative Todd Rokita, sent three separate emails, including one from his campaign, which throws cold water on Donnelly for questioning the timing and motivation of Comey's pink slip. President Trump's actions come as Comey was investigating possible links between Russian officials and people connected to the Trump campaign and the Trump White House. Senator Donnelly issued a statement noting the curious timing. 3rd District Representative Jim Banks and 6th District Representative Luke Messer pointed out in theirs that politicians of all stripes had lost faith in Comey. Rokita's emails attempt to take Democrats to task for what the congressman says is disingenuous outrage aimed at scoring political points. And one of the three messages, all sent within half an hour of each other Wednesday morning, pits Rokita's campaign not against a political 4th District adversary, but against Donnelly. In an email, Rokita campaign spokesman Tim Edson says Rokita is considering a Senate run and accuses Donnelly of unfairly attacking Trump, even though Donnelly has advised the administration to avoid conflicts of interest by appointing a special prosecutor to investigate claims of Russian meddling. A statement from Donnelly campaign manager Peter Hanscom says the incumbent senator is trying to put politics aside and urges Rokita and other lawmakers to treat this issue with the seriousness it deserves. You're listening to Lakeshore Update from Lakeshore Public Radio 89.1 FM. I'm Sarah Dykstra. National Weather Service officials say all the rain clouds this month may hold a silver lining for Indiana. NWS hydrologist Al Shipe says this year was shaping up similarly to the most recent drought year of 2012 until recently.
This was the second warmest start of the year to the record warm year of 2012. Starting in early May of 2012, it got warmer and drier. This year, it got cooler and wetter.
Shipe says that means it's likely the state has at least forestalled, if not escaped, the possibility of a drought this year. However, he says Southwest Indiana is bearing the brunt of the recent rainfall because land downstream from the state's major rivers cannot absorb any more rainwater. In northern parts of the state, such as around Lafayette, Shipe says smaller streams pose the greatest threat. He says isolated heavy rainfall has meant a boom and bust cycle for tributaries of the Wabash River, which have seen low flow and flood conditions alternate in recent weeks. About 50% of Indiana's corn crop has been planted. It's hard to say how many of those seeds will survive. Indiana Public Broadcasting's Lee DeNoon reports.
Purdue Ag professor Bob Nielsen says saturated soils sometimes suffocate seeds and keep them from sprouting. He says only the northeast corner of Indiana has been dry enough in recent days to allow corn planting.
The vast majority of the state is sort of all suffering the same problem of frequent rainfall and soils that are simply too wet to have equipment on. And so pretty much the whole state needs, a good week or two of drier weather.
Nielsen says a fairly significant frost over the weekend didn't help, and it's too soon to know if the emerging corn plants were damaged. He says farmers have about another month to plant or replant corn if necessary, and many have the option of switching to soybeans after that because of a shorter growing season. For Indiana Public Broadcasting, I'm Lee DeNoon.
You're listening to Lakeshore Update from Lakeshore Public Radio 89.1 FM. I'm Sarah Dykstra. With a look at Theater at the Center's performance of Cabaret, here's John Kane.
Joining me for this edition of Eye on the Arts is Phil Potempa, Director of Marketing at Theater at the Center. And Phil, welcome back.
Thank you.
And one of my favorite musicals of all time is Cabaret.
All right, you're in the right place then.
I've been in it. I've seen it. I've seen the original. I've seen the movie. And I've seen the more recent one with Alan Cumming at Studio 54 in New York. So what version are we going to see this time?
And that's a great question. And audiences probably scratch their head and think, what version? There's only one version. It's Cabaret. And that's not the case, as you just pointed out. There is the film version. The version that Linda Fortunato, our director and choreographer, has chosen is the 1998 version, which is, again, a little more recent. But she has decided that she wants to be a little bit more kind of have some fun with it, with what she says it's not going to be so much bawdy or racy. She says it'll be a little suggestive. So a bit of a tease to the audiences. Of some of the debauchery that would happen behind these closed doors of the cabaret, but as she puts it, not in your face, you know. So that, I guess, is up to the imagination of the audience.
Yeah, at Studio 54, it was pretty much in your face.
Yes, and that's the version I think I saw when the Broadway tour came through not too long ago, down on Chicago, correct?
Yeah, yeah. And they had little cabaret tables you could set at down front.
Fun.
And Alan Cumming was right there. It was great. It was really cool. But the show itself is based on the writings of Christopher Isherwood, who lived in Berlin during the Weimar. Well, I guess it would be the early Nazi years, actually.
Correct.
Yeah, after the Weimar Republic fell. So and it was a time of terrible inflation that they'd gone through after World War I,
mm-hmm.
and people were ruined, and there was so this whole bohemian element rose up.
That's right. A chance to escape.
Yeah.
That's
a place
right.
To escape. So tell us about it.
Okay. So what we've gotten is, again, a chance for you to come into an atmosphere that is a bit of, you want to feel as though you're kind of behind these closed doors and you can kind of do whatever you want. That carefree spirit that was happening just as the unrest was happening, as you talked about, with the political change with the Nazi Party coming into power. So in Berlin, this was a chance where people could come in and forget your troubles, forget your cares, just like the lyrics say. And so many people think of Sally Bowles, the character that was played by Liza Minnelli in the movie in 1972, but really it's told through the eyes of the American writer. So I myself as a writer can see this part being something that is the narrative for it. And so Patrick Tierney, who is a favorite of our stage, he'll be playing that role of Cliff. And then he meets, of course, these characters within the cabaret. Sally Bowles is the singer that lures him. And then the mischievous, whimsical MC, who you said Alan Cumming did such a fantastic job portraying, which I did not see that tour when it came through Chicago since he's New York based. But it's still a chance to have some fun and feel a little bit naughty.
Mm-hmm. And this production has the story of Fräulein Schneider and Herr Schultz.
It does. And you were talking about exactly, this was a time when people had to ration what they had. And so there's that wonderful song where the gentleman that runs the fruit market presents the landlady that is his next door neighbor with a pineapple, which was certainly this coveted find back then because you didn't have access to such things as fruits, which would be considered a luxury at that time.
Yeah. The movie doesn't emphasize that story much at all. I think Fräulein Schneider is their landlady, I believe.
Correct.
But I don't know that Herr Schultz is in it at all.
I don't believe so.
But that's a big part of this production.
It is. And we have the wonderful Iris Lieberman returning, and she played the heavy, the meanie in Annie Warbucks, our holiday show, and she's a favorite. She's been on our stage with Fiddler, which, speaking of being on our stage, cabaret has never been done on our stage, which I can't believe with this 26, 27-year history of programming, cabaret's not been done for our audience, so this is certainly fresh for our audience is Northwest Indiana.
Well, a bunch of us amateurs did it in 1990 on the stage.
On our stage at the Performing Arts Center, okay.
And I was the MC, and a woman named Kathy Siegert from Crown Point was Sally Bowles. And we had done this as a community theater production in Crown Point. And some people who were involved with us with the Arts Center back then saw it and wanted us to do it at the Arts Center. So, because there were two communities. Well, there had been an earlier community theater production when the building first opened, maybe in 89. I guess it would have been in 89.
Yes.
Yeah. And that was Sweeney Todd.
Okay.
Yeah. And a lot of people who were involved in community theater throughout Northwest Indiana were in that production.
So would it be on our wall of fame? Because audiences and patrons know that outside in the lobby we have all the productions framed. Or would it be just proceed maybe when some of that staged programming was happening? Do you think there's a photo up on our wall?
No. Because it wasn't a Theater at the Center production.
There was no theater at the center quite yet. Okay.
That came along shortly thereafter. Yeah. So the show runs through.
Yes. It's May the 4th through June the 4th. And again, you want to get tickets because it's an intimate 400-seat space. You're right there in the cabaret, so you can't do better than that.
That was John Kane talking with Phil Potempa, Marketing Director for Theater at the Center, about the upcoming performance of Cabaret through June 4th. You can hear Eye in the Arts each Monday on Morning Edition, Regionally Speaking, and All Things Considered. Legacy Foundation President Carolyn Saxton talked with Regionally Speaking host Chris Nolte about On the Table community discussions. Chris began the conversation by asking Saxton when On the Table began and when it will happen in Lake County.
On the Table was started by the Chicago Community Trust 4 years ago. And the idea was to gather information from people in small settings, usually over a meal, might be breakfast, lunch, dinner, maybe snacks, maybe wine and cheese. They could be at a personal home. It might be in the workplace. It might be in a restaurant, wherever anyone would like to host. This is where we might have this type of event. Usually it's about 6 or 8 people at a table. And the idea is it's an unfacilitated conversation. And the conversation is about opportunities for the area where you live, some of the challenges, some of the things that you might see that you would like to happen in your community. And after those on the table experiences, there's a survey that people fill out and send it in either by email or those that they might pick up at the event. And from that, we'll be gathering information that we will use, that Legacy Foundation will use, to determine plans for the next year through our strategic initiatives.
What got the Legacy Foundation interested in using this concept, rather than, say, a larger setting? Because there have been a lot of community conversations around in the region. Lakeshore Public Media sponsored a few of them around the community, especially talking about particular issues involving race and policing and other type of very serious issues. What seems to appeal about having this type of a much more intimate setting to have a conversation?
Well, I think one of the things is that this won't be a guided conversation. So, as you mentioned, some of the other conversations have been on particular topics. These will not be on a particular topic. It'll kind of be organic, whatever it is that people want to talk about at the table. And because people are going to know one another, they may be more open in their conversations. But I think the other thing that is really critical in this process is that we want to have these conversations throughout all of Lake County. We want to know what the people in Lowell think, what the people in Gary think, what the people in Hoover, in Whiting, in Hammond, in Munster, all of the communities that are located in Lake County. And so when we gather these conversations together or gather these events together, there'll be conversations that we'll be able to say, this is what we know Lowell wants for their community. This is what Munster wants for their community. And will help us guide specific initiatives for those communities, but also for Lake County as a whole. So it's a little bit different in a couple of different ways.
Do you think that this might be perhaps the best way that the Legacy Foundation can find out the areas of need, the areas that need to be improved, rather than just a big conversation that you'll get more information out of it than just a general survey that might go out to the public, you say?
Well, I think one of the things that we want to do is engage people in the process. So just doing a survey, I don't think is really a true engagement tool, although you can gather information. Sometimes you may not get the responses, the number of responses that you would like to have. And so our hope is that by engaging these individuals and the participants in these conversations, that we'll be able to engage them in future action for their communities as well.
Okay. Now, you had a chance to bring this up here at the 24th annual meeting of the Legacy Foundation on Tuesday, May 2nd. What kind of timetable would you like to see these on-the-table conversations get started here in Lake County?
Well, the interesting thing about this process, it's a one-day event. So all of these conversations will take place on September 26th, except for maybe a few organizations. I think the Rotary Clubs may do them during that week, but they are all going to be held on September 26th. So that way we will get people together throughout the county on one day, over a meal, over coffee and donuts or a lunch or a dinner or in people's homes to talk about what they'd like to see for their community. And so from that one day, then we'll be able to use the information that is provided through the surveys that they complete to help us in the future.
Now, if you plan for this event on September 26th, you get the data coming in, the comments coming in. After that, what kind of plan do you have to go with this information that you gathered forward?
Well, the University of Illinois in Chicago was hired by the Knight Foundation to put together all of the results of the survey. And they're doing that not just for Legacy Foundation, but for 9 other community foundations across the country who are participating. The other community foundations are doing theirs at different times of the year. Ours is the only one on September 26th. But the University of Illinois will be providing us with the results of all of the surveys. And we hope to have all of those results back within about 8 to 10 weeks after the event.
Sounds like that everybody, not only staff, but yourself with the Legacy Foundation, are very excited about this opportunity to be able to get the University of Illinois Chicago together by way of the Knight Foundation to get this project off and running, and looking forward to whenever the data comes back in from the big gathering, so to speak, on September 26th.
Well, you know, it is exciting. And I want to use the example of Lexington, Kentucky. They just had theirs in March. They were selected by the Knight Foundation also. There were 10 of us selected for this. And Lexington, Kentucky held theirs in March. And they had a goal of reaching 5,000 people. They reached 11,000 people.
Wow.
Yeah. Wow, is really it. We have a goal of 1,500 people. We would love to reach more than that. And I'm going to be announcing at this annual meeting that as of this date, we already have 100 hosts who are willing to provide some type of get-together and host those either in their homes or at their place of work or wherever it is that they might be. I think what we really are shooting for is between 200 and 250 hosts on that day, so we can get to the number that we have as our goal.
Well, you might get lucky, and maybe somebody, some organization like NIPSCO can put together like 500 or 600 people at one sitting for like lunch or something. Wouldn't that be great?
It would be. You know, and each table, even if there is a large group like that, the tables would be broken down of 6 to 8 people, so that you'll still have that intimate conversation with the other people around the table. And certainly, if you'd like to be involved with one of those, we would love to have you in one, too.
Carolyn Saxton is president and chief operating officer with the Legacy Foundation, which is Lake County's community foundation. And we're talking about a project that the Legacy Foundation is working with by way of the John S. and James L. Knight Foundation and the University of Illinois Chicago. It's going to be a community conversation, truly a community conversation, although not everybody in one big room, but a lot of people in a lot of different rooms. A program called On the Table. It's going to get underway in September, but it's gotten kicked off at the annual meeting of the Legacy Foundation on May 2nd. Carolyn, thank you very much for the information. The best of luck on this, and we'll be looking forward to finding out more as we get closer to September 26th.
Okay, thank you. And I do want to mention that Legacy Foundation is also putting some of our own money into this project, as well as the Knight Foundation and Horizon Bank as well. So this is really a community effort, and we're excited about it.
It's beyond just hoping what the Knight brothers had thought that they wanted to do for communities that had newspapers in which they once served the communities as well, too, to be able to expand it to beyond that, too.
That's right. And we encourage anyone who would like to be involved, either by hosting or by participating, to send us an email at legacy@legacyfdn.org or give us a call at 219-736-1880.
Lakeshore Update, I'm Chris Nolte.
Regionally Speaking can be heard every Monday through Thursday from noon to 1 p.m. on Lakeshore Public Radio 89.1 FM. And show podcasts can be found online at lakeshorepublicradio.org, where you can also find podcasts of all of our local programming, including Lakeshore Update. Lakeshore Update is supported by the listeners and members of Lakeshore Public Radio 89.1 FM. Podcasts for Lakeshore Update are posted each Friday on our website, lakeshorepublicradio.org, as well as on NPR One. Make sure to search for WLPR and select us as your home station. Music for Lakeshore Update was written and produced by bensound.com. For the latest in local news and information, tune in Monday at 6 a.m. for Morning Edition with local host Sharon Jackson on Lakeshore Public Radio, 89.1 FM. For Lakeshore Update, I'm Sarah Dykstra.